This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome. It is 8:07. Your time check is brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. Your top stories, Carl Dean, Dolly Parton's husband, has passed away at the age of 82. They had a very, very long and what appeared to be a loving relationship, but you just never saw much of him. And that seemed to work out quite well in their relationship and certainly didn't slow her down from being hugely successful. Then we've got more serious issues that we need to deal with as well, including President Trump pausing the military aid to Ukraine and what kind of implications that could have. And to speak on that and other things, joining us right now, former Congressman Ted Yoho is with us. Good morning, Congressman. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Bob. You and Greg doing good?
Fantastic. It's always a pleasure to hear from you, and I've always enjoyed picking your brain on these things. Do you think that it was a good idea that President Trump has put the military aid on hold?
I do. I think this thing needed to be renegotiated from the get-go because there was, even people in the White House said, we're not sure this deal is going to go through the way we thought it was. And I would have pulled it right then.
Yeah, instead of it unfolding live on the air with cameras rolling. I mean, I understand Trump's reaction to that because it's, you know, they had the green light and everything. It was just going to be a pomp and circumstance, you know, sign this and we'll all toot our own horns kind of thing, right?
It was supposed to be that way. But again, there were some advisors in the Trump administration, you know, once they started talking behind the scenes. They said, we don't think this is going to play out. Maybe we should hold it off. And they decided to go ahead that they thought Trump had enough, gravitas
yes.
to hold this off. And Zelensky the whole time wanted security guarantees versus security assurances. And if you go back to the Budapest memorandum, that was what I think it was in, when was that? 94, I think it was. Ukraine, when Russia broke apart, Ukraine wound up with the third largest arsenal of nukes in the world. And so they were deteriorating and they needed to be reprocessed, and that was going to cost over $5 billion, and they didn't have the money. And so the Budapest Agreement came out where they would give the nukes back to Russia. They would reprocess them for fuel rods. And the U.S., the U.K., and Russia, they assured security for Ukraine. Now, there's a difference between security assurance and a security guarantee. And, of course, Russia broke that, and, you know, they've done that overall, you know, pretty much every agreement they had. And so, you know, they learned from past mistakes. And then if you look at the history of Ukraine, you can go back over 1,000 years. They've been an on-again, off-again country, but they kept coming back, and they always came back. And then if you look at what Stalin did in the 1900s, they killed over, 3.5 to 5 million people with a famine that was created just to starve the Ukrainians out, and they wanted that territory. And then, you know, eventually they got it and was part of Russia. And then when the Soviet Union broke apart, Vladimir Putin comes in, and his whole goal is to rebuild the motherland. I mean, that's what he's been after for 20-plus years.
What's the ultimate goal or the mission here when it comes to Ukraine? I mean, I know former President Biden said, it's open-ended. Like, we'll fight as long as we need to. I don't think the American people are going to accept that. We've had Vietnam. We've had Afghanistan. I think people are tired of that. But, you know, how do you punish, I guess, and keep Putin from doing more, but yet have some realistic view of ending this thing?
Yeah, well, you know, if you go to Biden, you know, anything he's done foreign policy-wise has been a disaster. You can look at Bob Gates' book, who was a Secretary of Defense under five presidents. He said every foreign policy that Joe Biden has been 100% wrong, and he's proved it here, too. And so where do you go from here? with Putin, you know, knowing what his end game is to rebuild Mother Russia, and he'll keep doing that. And you look how he's done that. You know, look what he did in the country of Georgia under George Bush, excuse me, and then, you know, what he did with Crimea with the unmarked little green soldiers that killed everybody. And there was the Minsk Agreement after Russia invaded Ukraine, and that was in 2014. And the agreement was that there would be an end to the violence. They would remove military equipment, return prisoners, and there was 2,500 people killed. But during that time period between then and the Minsk Agreement that got signed about 6 months later, I think it was October of 2015, there was an estimated 15,000 soldiers killed. So there was fighting ongoing in these things because there was no security guarantee versus assurance. And where you go from here, when I was in Congress, when I was on the Foreign Affairs Committee, there was a bill that came up that we were going to give Ukraine $1 billion. And I voted against it. And I said, no. And the chairman says, Ted, I'm afraid you don't understand. This is something that we're going to give. And I said, no, sir, I do understand. We're you know, back at that time, I think we weren't even $20 trillion right. in debt. And I told the chairman, I says, we're $20 trillion in debt. We can't afford this. And I still voted against it, even though he tried to talk me out of it. And so I don't want this to go on forever. I don't know, the American people don't want this to go on forever. But to put, you know, the mineral deal in there, I'm all for getting rare earth minerals, but there's rare earth minerals here. They're in Latin America and they're in Africa. And China's getting them in all those mm-hmm. countries
yep.
outside of us. But if we put U.S. businesses in there to extract the rare earth minerals, thinking that's going to bring peace. I mean, I think we tried that in the Middle East with oil, you know, in Iran and those other countries. You know, we went to war over the protection of U.S. Interest over there.
Well, that's a great point, and you brought up oil. What is the deal with the Europeans? I mean, on one hand, they fear Putin. They don't want him to expand. They want to, tamp him down and stop him. However, they're the huge buyers of natural gas and oil, and so they have had a huge hand in keeping Putin's war machine running.
Oh, absolutely. They absolutely have. And, you know, that's something that they need to come to terms with. And people said, well, what do you think the role of the U.S. is in this? And I said, well, you know, NATO was formed after World War II for a reason, and that was to prevent Russian aggression into any of those other states or nations or countries. And we're a member of NATO, and I think our commitment to NATO should be as much as anybody else's. In fact, it should be probably a little bit less because it is on their shore. It's right next door to them. But we should be supportive in that, and I want no troops over there. And I think we have put more money than I know we have. And I think there needs to be just a come to Jesus meeting with the Europeans. And, you know, the one good thing I see out of this, it's rattled their cages the way Trump called this deal off, where they're talking about creating a standing army. But that's scary in itself, too, because, you know, are we going to rebuild the German war machine? Is that all going to come into play? And what kind of pressure does that put on Putin? Putin is the aggressor in this, and that was something else. Trump calls Zelensky a dictator because they haven't held elections. Well, their constitution says during these times you can't have elections. How do you have elections in areas that are being bombed and, you know, things going on by the Russians? And so, you know, is he a dictator? I don't know. They paused elections according to their constitution and saying that Zelensky caused this war. Well, I believe it was the Russians that, you know, invaded the Crimea back in 2014. And then the way they lined up to go into the Ukraine, you know, I think that narrative that he's putting out there empowers Putin. And then you got to think, what does this do to Xi Jinping? You know, is he looking at this, say, you know what, they're weak, they're not going to push back, so we're going to go into Taiwan, and that's going to bring us into a war.
I absolutely agree with that. That is a very reasonable concern and fear. Congressman Ted Yoho, thanks so much. It was great to connect with you again, and hopefully
we'll
get
to
do it. Yeah, hopefully we'll get to do it again soon.
All right, man. Y'all take care.
All right. No fish is safe when Ted Yoho is out there. So, yeah. Former Congressman Ted Yoho. Pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a lot more to talk about. We just kind of scratched the edges a little bit there. It is 8:17 right now on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. And stay tuned. 97.3 The Sky. Good morning and welcome. It's 8:21. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. Your time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. Just had a great conversation with former Congressman Ted Yoho. These are the kind of things that you'll never miss if you have access to the Bob Rose Show podcast, which is super easy. You can download it wherever you normally get your podcast. You can also use the Audacy app, AUDACY. Click on subscribe. And you'll never miss a minute of the show. Every compelling moment. All right. The Bob Rose Golf Scramble is sold out. Thank you for your continued support for the Arc of Alachua County. Their work with the developmentally disabled. I'm proud to have my name associate with the wonderful folks there. And it's the 27th annual Bob Rose Golf Scramble. It's Friday, April 4th, presented by Gainesville Harley-Davidson on 97.3 The Sky. And even though it is sold out, we still could use some volunteers. So if you think you have April the 4th open for something like that, please call Mark Johnson at the ARC, 352-246-3516. I got to tell you, I was a little surprised, at least, that the Senate Democrats didn't want to support this bill, and it is the protection of women and girls in sports. I know that many of them, you know, still support this whole DEI, woke agenda, all the trans stuff, but I thought this really had enough logic and common sense attached to it that at least a few Democrats would say, look, I'm not going to let the far left members of our party, you know, continue to steer us down this, you know, path to nowhere. But it's not to be. Okay. And tennis legend Martina Navratilova, you know, she checks all the boxes for, you know, the far lefties. Oh, except that she doesn't support biological men playing in women's sports. I wonder what she knows about that. A super competitive, highly successful tennis champion. That's what she knows about it. But they don't listen to her. And she had a fiery reaction Monday night after no Senate Democrat voted in favor of the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act to break the filibuster. Now, the bill came out of another guy associated with athletics, a former coach, Senator Tommy Tuberville. It failed to receive 60 votes it needed to get through the procedural vote. They needed 60, the Republicans did, only received 51. No Democrats sided with Republicans on the bill. Two Democrats were absent from the vote, as were two Republicans. The bill failed 51-45. And Navratilova is one of the sports figures who weighed in. She said, you know, she couldn't understand why they won't support it. And she said, I am mad as hell. 18-time Grand Slam champion. Staunch Democrat. But has been critical of her own party for failing to support efforts to keep biological males from competing against women and girls in sports. But no Democrats would go that way. I guess that's very good for Republicans and conservatives that the Democrats can't see the error of their ways, can't see how what a huge disconnect they have from most families in the country. So I don't want to give them too much advice. Not that, you know, they're really listening, but again, this is another thing they're absolutely missing the boat on. They just don't get it. When President Trump signed the No Men in Women's Sports executive order last month, Martina Navratilova spoke out and criticized the Democrats for dropping the ball. I hate that the Democrats totally failed women and girls on this very clear issue of women's sports being for females only. Again, she speaks with experience and clarity, mm-hmm. and doesn't speak at all for conservatives or even to conservatives.
Right.
She is a Democrat, and they, not one of them, would listen to her very professionally based opinion.
I know I harp on it, but it goes back to they fought for all these rights for so long.
Yeah.
And they let one little generation of some radical thinkers totally take away their platform.
Yep.
And they all just disappeared. It's sad.
Yeah. She expressed her frustration in January when the House passed the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act. Only two Democrats voted with Republicans on the bill. More Dems need to step up there. I know many who agree but are scared to speak up because of reelection. I say do the right thing. Grow a spine. Ooh. Yep. The Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act would require Title IX. To treat gender as recognized based solely on a person's reproductive biology and genetics at birth, and would disallow any adjustment for it to apply to gender identity. The Tuberville-backed bill had more than 40 co-sponsors in the Senate. It would also codify one of Trump's many recent executive orders, giving the policy better longevity. Again, it is, to me, not a partisan issue. It is a common sense issue.
Yep. Absolutely.
It's a woman's rights issue as well. You know, remember, you're clearly pushing away the rights of women to make way for the perceived rights that somebody they believe should have and be transgendered. You're the rights that are granted you or whatever are never supposed to come at the expense of somebody else's hard-fought rights. But they some of the most basic, simple constructs, they don't get. They don't get it. Okay. Well, we'll just keep on rolling, keep on pushing forward. And one of your main headlines is Trump pausing military aid to Ukraine following that dust up, if you want to call it that, with President Zelensky. Is he going to apologize? That's what President Trump's waiting for. This will be interesting. The showdown. It's 8:28, and you're listening to 97.3 The Sky. What will the president talk about tonight? Yep, it'll be a joint address to Congress, and that'll be at 9 p.m. We'll dig into some of the things that is believed he will touch on, four different prongs, if you will. And what about Zelensky? Haven't heard anything yet. But I think President Trump is waiting for an apology. In the meantime, there has been a pause in military aid to Ukraine. Very interesting. All right. Is Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, taking a page out of Elon Musk and Doge's playbook? Well, it's possible, although I doubt he will give direct credit But it turns out that California Governor Newsom has ordered state employees to return to the office.
Wow.
At least for 4 days a week.
What a great new idea. Yeah. That's just earth-shattering.
In an executive order, Newsom cites the work-from-home and hybrid policies that are the legacy of the coronavirus lockdowns. He does not cite DOGE, except to say that fired federal workers might be available for state jobs. And New York Governor Kathy Hochul appears to be making similar pitches to federal workers. Interesting. In a press statement, Newsom's office said, Governor Gavin Newsom today issued an executive order requiring all agencies and departments within his administration to update their hybrid telework policies to a default of at least 4 days per week by July the 1st. The order establishes a four-day per week in-office expectation with further telework flexibilities granted on a case-by-case basis in light of individual circumstances. Consistent with the executive order and existing family-friendly employment policies and legal obligations. And in California, they have quite a few.
It's kind of interesting to watch, you know, especially California and New York kind of, I don't know, maybe kind of get an idea once in a while that maybe they're not doing everything the way they should have been doing it. And maybe the president's got some good ideas there.
Yeah, but they'll never get credit. And they'll never want to admit it. But, okay, maybe they'll put some of these things into place.
By the way, we have confirmed Kat Kamick will be on the show tomorrow morning, 8:05. I'm sure she'll have some feedback on what the president has to say tonight.
You think?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think so.
Yes, the House has, you know, passed what appears to be a pretty good spending bill in terms of cuts that are included in it. But what's going to happen in the Senate? Are they going to puff this up full of air again? Balloon it back up? Or are they going to keep it shrunk down? Yeah, it will be, again, interesting to get her take on what the president has to say and how he lays things out. By the way, Governor Newsom, when he's calling all these state workers back to work, to further enhance the state's workforce needs, the governor is also directing CalHR to streamline the hiring process for former federal employees seeking employment in key roles, including firefighting, forest management, and weather forecasting. Democrats, of course, have mocked and demonized DOGE, but it appears they're copying them at least a little bit. All right. Get back to work. I wonder why.
Well, and once COVID was done, what I guess I just wonder, I can't imagine having the perspective, well, I know you hired me for a job, and because of this pandemic, we had to work remotely, but it's over and done now, and I just don't want to go back. I guess I just can't imagine. To me, it almost feels like arrogance, because there's no reason for you to not go back to the job they hired you to do.
Well, and some would say, though, if, and it's difficult to measure, if your productivity has been the same or better by working at home, clearly everybody understands that would, for most people, be a better lifestyle, plus the savings on the commute, the having to dress for work, and all that goes along with it, especially in California, if you live in some of the busier, more expensive places, too.
Oh, I get that.
It makes a difference. But again, to me, it all matters. Productivity is the bottom line. Have you been able to accomplish what you're supposed to? And if not, no, you got to come back to work. Clearly, you're somebody who needs some supervision. But if not, I mean, they sold us the idea of teleworking and all of that, telecommuting, decades ago. Said it's just around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the pandemic, they were forced to initiate
right.
it. I think a lot of it comes down to, at least corporately, they really want to have command and control. And by having people work at home, they don't feel that sense of command and control.
Right.
And I think that bothers some people.
Sure,
but,
I can see that.
But to me, the bottom line is, productive or not, if you can manage working from home and do it effectively, then, you know, that opportunity, you would want it to exist. But if not, if there, and there are plenty of those people, a lot of them who want to work at home, and then when they work from home, they might not want to admit it. But if they're being honest, they'll say, yeah, I can't believe how difficult it is to focus. People think I'm like at the home here available. I'm not available. I'm at work. At work just happens to be in the structure I also call my home.
Well, and I know people that have dealt with that. They've got a spouse that maybe works part-time or is in the home. Suddenly they need something. They need your attention.
Yep.
Kids are home that day, whatever the case may be.
They're the go-to, the fallback, the everything.
Whereas if you're at work, they're less likely to disturb you.
I can't do anything about it. I'm not I'm not here. I'm not home. I can't run this to there or bring you your lunch or whatever else.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's... It everybody wants it to be for them. It is not.
I couldn't do
for
it
for everyone.
For most kinds of jobs, I don't think I would really enjoy it because of the distractions.
Yeah, see, I guess maybe the nature of the hours that I work, it wasn't difficult for me to focus.
Yeah, right.
I enjoyed it, although I do enjoy face-to-face and being in the office, too, and seeing your reactions, too. I would like, I mean, in a perfect world, I would like a hybrid kind of a situation where, you know, once or twice a week I could work from home. I mean, we did it for 2 years, and if listeners knew, they certainly didn't say anything about it, and we didn't make a big deal about it one way or another, and we delivered, you know? We delivered, and that's the important thing. And, you know, our little scorecard reflected that we did well, of course, during COVID, so.
Oh, we got our new one lately, though, too, and we did well. So.
Well, which leads us to this. Thank you. For supporting what we do, for listening, and it is just, well, we couldn't do it without you. And 23 years for me, and continue to enjoy it and love it every day. And it's because of you, the listeners. All right, let's go to the Davis-Gainesville Chevrolet Skylines and connect with Jeff. Good morning.
Hey, so government employees that are in hiding. Government employee, if you're a evil, well, not evil, if you're doing dishonest, nefarious things in the light of day, how much more nefarious, dishonest things could you accomplish while you're hiding? And this has all started since COVID. Imagine all the people that have been going, wow, this whole COVID thing's got us all in our homes. We can do twice as much dishonest, nefarious stuff, and now they're having trouble letting that go because we have an administration that wants people to be not be dishonest, and we want people to get work done. God bless America.
Yeah. To that point, yes, there have been cases where people, depending on the kind of work that they do, when they were forced to go home, if they weren't being managed or policed in some cases, they were taking on other jobs.
Oh, yeah.
They were taking on other jobs. They were like double dipping.
Absolutely.
And, of course, you cannot accomplish the tasks of, you know, two full-time jobs or whatever on one, you know, 40-hour-a-week schedule. And there were more than a few people were, you know, and some you don't know about that actually got away with it, and you probably won't know.
Imagine you work for a company, you call an Uber or something, and another employee shows up to pick you up. You're like, what are you doing?
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people, either they don't know or they don't care, but if you work at home on a computer, there are many products that are out there so that you are being supervised whether you know it or not. And I mean, they can see every keystroke.
Yeah, just turning your computer on is not... going to do it.
And just turning your computer on and logging in to the company, you think, doesn't mean that you're at work either. That's very measurable, and there's a lot of people have been fortunate that they haven't gotten truly busted for that. Many people were given second chances and then some.
Yeah.
The United States General Services Administration has cut over 100,000 unused software licenses. That'll save $9.6 million annually.
Wow.
Thanks to Doge.
It's real money.
And the savings just keeps on coming. It's 8:45. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. And it also is a Trash Talkin' Tuesday, thanks to Florence Recycling on 97.3 The Sky. Good morning and welcome. Another day in paradise, my friends. It is 8:49. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. And I was at Bike Week this weekend. They call it the first weekend. Mm-hmm. And then the tail end will be this coming weekend. Historically, it's always been busier at the end. And I can tell you, if that's any indication, then this year is going to be a really big one. And I've used it time and time again, and I've been going over there now for 30 years, as kind of an economic indicator. When Bike Week is busy, and also you can sort of measure the vibe, mm-hmm. because sometimes it's been busy, and you can tell these are people that they made the reservations a long time ago. They were really looking forward to it, but things have tightened up since. So they decided to take it, but there's a different, it is a little bit different mindset, a little more, I don't know, cautious and not wanting to spend as much. The lines are shorter at the vendors.
And you can feel that almost
in the air,
can't you?
You can.
Or you can feel the opposite of that for sure.
Well, yeah, and I got to tell you, and this is good news, I just think the crowds have been extremely positive and upbeat, and it's been busy. And this isn't just from me. Well, of course, it's anecdotal no matter who you talk to at this point. But, you know, I talked to many people, some residents and some bikers who visit on a regular basis, and everybody agrees, wow, this year certainly appears to be very, very busy and just a very upbeat, positive vibe. And I use that to measure because a lot of these people, especially that come from like the northern states, they're entrepreneurs.
Right.
They are like subcontractors and stuff. A lot of them have, you know, because you can see them. They have their construction trailer.
Right.
And maybe it's them and a few of their, you know, their workers, their crew or whatever. And they come down and, you know, they have a great time. Others, you know, may bring their families down and they'll work some of the riding in, et cetera. But it is really a good kind of cross section of, you know, a lot of working people, plenty of blue collar, but then a lot of what I would call entrepreneurs, subcontractor type people, professionals that are, I guess, blue collar professionals, if you will.
Well, I see that you did your part. You're wearing a Daytona Beach Bike Week 2025 shirt.
Thank you.
With skulls and flames.
Well, I set my standards. I mean, I don't want too much ink on it, but I want it to be one of those on the thinner, lighter side, and I accomplished though,
well,
so I made the purchase, even though I probably have another three or four garbage bags full of shirts that I need to get rid of.
Oh,
but it doesn't stop me because
you got to replenish, Bob.
Well, you know, if you love America, you want to help our economy. And that's what
And a lot of this kind of stuff actually comes from smaller businesses, entrepreneurs, people that, you know, they're getting these things made, they're designing them, they've got their tent, their little pop-up, and that's how they can make some money.
True, too.
So, you know, you're just doing your part for the economy.
Here's a blast from the past.
Uh-oh.
Do you remember the name Casey Anthony?
Oh, yes.
Doesn't take too long. Most people go, oh, yeah. And
yes,
if I told you that was the mother of Kaylee Marie Anthony, then, you start to put the pieces together from the Orlando area. Oh, what a terrible, tragic thing that occurred there. But it was our friend Ron that's down there in, like, middle South Florida. And shout out to Ron on the farm. And he's the one who sent me this TikTok thing. And a lot of times I won't open it, but it came from him.
Yeah,
so I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I ignore a lot of that stuff.
And it's Casey Anthony on TikTok promoting her legal advocate role.
Okay.
Yeah. She said, "This is my first of probably many recordings on a series that I'm starting," she says on the video. "I am a legal advocate. I am a researcher. I've been in the legal field since 2011. You were in the legal field in 2011, Casey, because you had to go through a murder trial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if you can count that. Maybe you can count that as legal experience. I was experienced in the legal. I experienced it firsthand.
Yeah.
I was sitting in the front row.
I don't know that I. Yeah, I don't. No, I don't think that counts.
And she goes on to say, I feel that it's necessary if I'm going to continue to operate appropriately as a legal advocate that I start to advocate for myself and also advocate for my daughter. It all started July 15, 2008, when Anthony's mother, Cindy, made a call to 911 saying her daughter's car smelled like a dead body and that Kaylee, her granddaughter, was missing. Yeah. Anthony was arrested just one day later for the first time. She was indicted on first-degree murder charges in October of 2008.
There's so much twisted irony in this story. So much.
Yes.
The fact that you would go down that road is something that you're going to do. You've been on plenty of national news camera stories, documentaries. I just think if I had done something like that, I would not choose anything that put me in front of the public ever again.
Yeah, and I think she had some brushes with the law, like over in the Daytona area at some at one point. I'm not sure. I can't remember the nature of it. But Kaylee's remains were found on December 11th of that year, not far from the Anthony's home. And Casey Anthony's murder trial began in May of 2011. Then on July 5th, Casey was found not guilty on all charges except for lying to investigators.
See, that's... I never got that.
Well, I mean, there was a pretty good forensics through their computers and the searches. And I guess because they couldn't clearly know for sure who did some of these searches, like, I don't know, using chloroform was one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's usually the kind of thing that busts the case wide open and it's a done deal. But in this case, it wasn't to be, and maybe that's something to say about her defense attorney. It was Baez, I think it was his name. And that definitely put him higher up on national prominence. But I
not the career path I would have probably chosen, considering the circumstances of your personal history.
A legal advocate.
Wow.
I am. It's one of those things that when Ron first sent it to me and I opened it, honestly, I thought, well, this is like a stunt.
Right.
This is AI. This is
right.
That's my first, you know, legal advocate.
Sure you are.
All right. We'll see. 9 o'clock stretch is coming up and a special guest that will have our Second Amendment advocate, 97.3 The Sky.